Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. My guest this week is a well-known convention personality, and I would say probably considered one of the founding fathers of the anime music video community. He's been doing it for a very long time, and you can still catch him at conventions in Southern California to this day. It's Brad DeMoss. Brad, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, it's no problem. I'm really looking forward to having somebody like you on, because I have seen your name floating around in convention programs and your videos floating around since, you know, I became an anime fan at like 96, and you've been doing it a lot longer than me. So, you know, I guess let's start with AMVs, because that's kind of what you're most well known for. I think probably your most well known thing is that the Evangelion Star Wars mashup that you did like in 2000 before anyone was doing that kind of thing.
Yeah, that was actually a response to multiple years of Kevin Caldwell dominating the Anime Expo competition. And it was I actually had the idea for making the episode one trailer the day after Expo 99. And the thing I had thought to myself was, I was thinking of what Kaiser Soze always used to say: to be number one, you had to have the will to do what the other guy wouldn't do. Right. So that's when I decided, okay, I'm going to take some sacred cows and I'm going to turn them on their ear. And that's where the genesis for the episode one trailer came.
So you were, back in the day, like, you know, late 90s, you were, your biggest competition was Kevin Caldwell, who everyone I know, he's mostly known for the Evangelion, the Engel video, right?
Yeah, exactly. It still gets shown as probably one of the best AMVs of all time, because he was pretty much the first one to really pioneer lip syncing as, you know, as a form of storytelling. It just seemed pretty obvious, and it's also because, you know, back in those days, it was so difficult to do lip sync because you were still using two VCRs or you were using digital video, and lip syncing wasn't as easy as it is today, where you could just take little slices and of individual lip flaps and put them together. You actually had to edit the stuff together. Or in some instances, what you would do is you would take a sequence and you would time it just right, and it would look like it was lip synced.
Yeah, I remember that's how you had to do it back in the day. Now you can just literally manipulate the footage.
Yeah.
It's much easier. But I was surprised to see, I was looking over your long list of video credits over the years. Your first one was in 1989, using, at least the first one listed here, I'm sure that wasn't your very first one, but notably, I noticed that it was a song from the Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure soundtrack, so I appreciated that.
As a matter of fact, that was the exact source of the song, because you could also get the song off of Big Pig's album,
which no one bought.
But that was the actual source we used. We used the Bill and Ted soundtrack. And that actually in the interest of full disclosure, that particular video, I was one of four editors that was involved in the project. The whole thing got started because I used to go to Comic-Con every year.
Okay.
And this was before it became massively huge. It was more of an insider thing.
Yeah.
And this was also before the new convention center opened in San Diego. So it was pretty much a small convention. And it was there was more of a sense of community among the fans. And my friends and I decided that we were just going to have an animation party. We were going to put together all of the animation, try to, you know, grab interesting stuff that we had, rare stuff, and we were just going to share it with people, just invite them in. And we did that for a few years, and then one of our friends, Wayne Smith, who he's a videographer down in Poway, which is a suburb of San Diego, he got the job of doing the Comic-Con television channel for a couple of years. And one of the things he said is, hey, you guys want to come down and edit a music video? We'll put together some clips from all the animation that you have, and we'll do it. Well, what we didn't realize is that Wayne had actually been doing it for years as a hobby. He actually is in the American Sim Editors. He's probably retired by now, but he had been doing this as a hobby, and he kind of introduced us to this hobby. So we, you know, got together, used two VCRs, and in the span of about 8 hours, we mashed together about 60 clips to that song, and that became the promo for the party. And then he actually broadcast it on the Comic-Con channel. We had a huge turnout that year, so then it became kind of a tradition for us to make a mashup video to promote the excuse me, to promote the party. It wasn't until 1995, when it was 96, that I became friends with Taliesin Jaffe, who does voiceover work, or he's also a voiceover director.
Yeah, we've had him on the show.
Yeah, and he actually saw the videos, and he was telling me, he says, "Hey, Brent, can I take copies of your videos with me to anime conventions?" I said, "Why?" He said, "Oh, because people love that kind of stuff." I said, "But it's not all anime, because it was anime from all over the world. I mean, I had East German stuff thrown in with Canadian stuff, thrown in with American stuff. Maybe, I think, like the first solo project that I did, which was Steam, which was actually more along the lines of what I was trying to do is I was trying to test out a nonlinear editing system that I put together for myself for my old Amiga computer." Mm. Yeah, there's a flashback right there.
Yeah.
So I was decided, okay, then what I'll do is I'll just make the video for the party. And I made this epic 7-minute video to a Peter Gabriel song, Steam. And it was only about 15% anime, but he wanted to show it. And then the next year I went to Project Akon for my first anime convention. And I said, "Ah, what the heck? I'll just, you know, submit the video to the contest," and I ended up getting best in show. And that's when I decided, maybe there's something to these videos. So I kind of dove into it full speed. I came back from Project Akon that year with a raging case of strep throat. Taliesin was struck too. And I said, "Hey, well, we're stuck at home. Why don't we just edit a video together?" And I said, "Here's the idea." And it was a year earlier that I had heard the Cake song, The Distance. And originally I thought that it was going to be the theme song for the Speed Racer film that never got off the ground until the Wachowski siblings completely wrecked it, depending on your opinion. But at the time, Johnny Depp was going to be Speed Racer. And I thought, "Oh, this must be the theme song." And then I found out it wasn't. And I said, "Well, I'm going to make it the theme song." So I gathered together all of the Speed Racer footage I could find. At the time, it was being broadcast on MTV at 11:30 at night on weekdays. So I taped every episode I could. And then we slapped that together in about a day, and then went to Anime Expo. And that was in 1997 was the first year. And that one won Best Action Adventure and came very close to winning Best in Show, if not for Anna Extra's really good video, Don't Talk, Just Kiss, which I think still holds up today.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Boy, that Cake song, so many Speed Racer videos made to that thing. You were the first, obviously. But
well, interestingly enough, was later that year, I went to Anime Week in Atlanta and took the video with me, and it turned out somebody else had done the video to what would actually probably be a more appropriate source, which is the Running Man segment from Neo Tokyo.
Yeah, yeah. Sure, why not? It's been used in a lot of anime music videos. I know that much because I've seen most of them.
Cake kind of lends itself to AMVs because their lyrics are easy to understand and they're funny and goofy.
Right, and it's got a cadence that's probably fun to edit too, I imagine. It's got that real specific kind of slam cut sort of cadence. That's really interesting. So when did you – so I assume in 89 – And earlier or whatever, when you're working with other guys, this was all VCR to VCR. I mean, you mentioned this guy, this friend you had who had an editing bay, mm-hmm. So you had access to better equipment. But how much time did you spend, you know, tape to tape?
Well, when you're doing tape to tape, you don't really have the time to sit around and just, you know, put ideas together when the ideas come to you. You kind of just spend an entire day, order pizza, and then just spend the entire day in the edit bay putting stuff together. Right. Because even if somebody has the edit bay, that's time that's not being used, you know, to rent it out to clients. So it's still expensive time.
Right.
So we'd slap together the videos in like one massive session. We'd gather all our videotapes together in boxes, listen to the song going, "Oh, I knew exactly the clip for this particular lyric." We'd reach out, we'd get the tape, slap it in. And of course, it was linear. It wasn't nonlinear. You couldn't walk in there and say, "I've got this great idea for the second part of the song, but we'll work on the first." You had to start at the beginning and end at the end.
Yeah, yeah. It was a completely different process back then.
And I also could mention, I could take you one step further, because my my experience in editing before making the mashup things was I actually had I did a film production class at UCLA where I made my own short film. And in that particular case, I actually had to physically cut the film apart and splice it together.
Right. Yeah.
And it wasn't like a negative either. It was Super 8 film, so I was cutting my original.
Right. Yeah, using that tape and putting it together. Yeah, yeah, yeah. when I was in school, we were past that point, but yeah, they still had all that equipment laying around. Well, that's really interesting. So when did, in your view, like, you've been around this stuff longer than, you know, longer than most people, and as long as anyone reasonably could be expected to have been involved in it, when did it really start exploding? Because this started out, I think, as like, oh, this is a neat little novelty, and then it became, you know, a main event with just as many people waiting to get in to see it as you would, you know, see for, like, the masquerade at a convention or something like that. It's still a huge part of convention culture.
I agree with that. It's been kind of a slow build. I mean, it also depends on the convention. There's some conventions that have always been friendly to AMVs, and particularly Anime Week in Atlanta, which was, you know, has a dedicated video art track room that's all about videos and not necessarily AMVs. They'll do creator spotlights for anybody, you know, any creator wants to show up, they'll do a creator spotlight, and they're very open about it. Whereas Anime Expo, because of the corporate sponsorship, there always seemed to be this feeling that they were worried about giving AMVs too much attention, lest they upset the sponsors who created the anime in the first place. So for many years, you wouldn't even see the AMV contest listed in the main program book. You would only find out about it in the schedule.
Yeah, so, that changed.
Yeah, that changed very quickly. It was like AX was pretty much the last holdout for that.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of the explosion of AMVs has happened not just because of the rise of nonlinear editing systems, because even the early systems were expensive. And then after that, you had to, like when I switched to Final Cut Pro, Final Cut Pro is a product that used to cost $1,000.
Yeah.
And it was just by itself was $1,000. Then they added stuff to it. Now you can get it for a Mac for $300. So as the price point kept coming down, and as more and more software became available, then you started to have more people that were getting into it. And those people got those tools, they got the practice, they got good. So it ended up, you know, because when I first started, I would say probably even as recently as maybe 2002, 2003, I was being invited to conventions as a guest of honor for the music videos, which completely flabbergasted me because this is just something that came naturally to me for so long. I'm like, wait, you want me to be a guest because I make AMVs? Okay. But now it's more regional. You'll have, you know, some people will travel a long way to go to a convention if they feel that the contest has enough cachet, or they'll stay local. They'll work with their local convention. In some instances, they'll even run the contest. There's more of a sense of community, especially because of animemusicvideos.org. You and I were discussing the competitive nature of AMV creators, but at the same time, there's also a sense of oneness that we're all part of a community. And a lot of times it depends on the convention that you go to. AWA still has that feel. And I think Anime Expo is starting to get to that, because this year they had the whole, they set aside one entire room for music videos. And I think, and Vlad took it over, and I think he completely nailed it. And the more that a convention sees that people really do want to come out and see AMVs, the more time and space they're going to give them. And that's really more like what I'm looking at now is, I mean, I make, you know, I mean, I'm, I have a full-time job. I have a family, you know, I've got a son, I've got another one on the way in 2 months. I don't really have time to edit as many videos as I used to early on. Early on, I would edit something on the order of 4 or 5 videos a year. Now I'm lucky if I get one done a year. So I devote more of my energies to Anime Expo, maybe FanimeCon if I can make it out there, to see what I can do to promote the AMV community as a whole rather than just to promote my work.
Right. Well, congratulations on the kid, by the way.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So that begs the question, like, there is a sense where it's like there's a circuit for this stuff. It's kind of like a film festival circuit in a weird, little abstract way. But I know creators will submit their videos to multiple conventions. Is there like a Grand Prix? Like, is there like, oh, if I win this show, I've won the biggest show? Is that AX? Or what do you feel like the big show is for AMVs?
Well, okay. That also depends on your perspective. I mean, there are some people, there's some creators who don't like AX. Yeah. Because, you know, some of them, because of the years in which, you know, they kind of gave the contest short shrift. And also, you know, AX is kind of behind the curve in the sense that they're very slowly adding categories. It used to be just the three: action, adventure, drama, and comedy. Well, how do you classify a fun video that's not necessarily funny or a romantic video that isn't as dramatic as one that's all about blood and guts, or an action video that's all about fast action as opposed to fighting. You can't. It's hard to classify these things, but they've kind of stuck to that. And then, of course, every convention has its own rules that upset other people. And the unfortunate thing is that every year Anime Expo has drama, which it's actually become the mantra of the Anime Expo thread on the org, drama.
Yeah.
But Anime Expo is still the biggest convention in the country. It's just behind the curve as far as AMVs, because there are other conventions that are smaller, like Otakon has a great reputation, mostly because it's really well run as a contest. I was lucky enough to go there 1 year, and I love the convention. I just wish it wasn't so expensive to go, because I would go every year. But I still would say that the gold standard is still Anime Week in Atlanta, and particularly the Masters competition, which is so exclusive. It's actually only held once every other year. And the prize in question is they actually go to the clothier that makes the Augusta Green jackets for the Masters Golf Tournament, and they actually have one custom made for the person who wins. So when you enter the contest, you actually send them not just your video, but your jacket size. Wow. So when they present the award, they bring out the jacket, and the person, and when they bring the person up, he gets to put on the jacket. There's really something intangibly wonderful about winning something so unique. I have two director's chairs from Anime Expo upstairs from winning Best in Show for 2 years, but I still have that jacket has still eluded me. I'll probably still work on it, but whether I would ever retire if I ever got that award, I don't know. It really depends on whether I still have stories to tell.
Right. This is the second time that you've mentioned storytelling, and that's the first time I've ever heard someone working in anime music videos, hobbyist who creates anime music videos, because you certainly can't get paid for it. Well, you could last year at Anime Expo, but never again. At least I don't think so. I don't think they did that again last year, or this year anyway. I'll get to that in a minute. But you talk about storytelling, and one of the biggest conversations I have with people who are really into anime music videos is this whole, is this creative? Is it actually creative, taking someone else's music to someone else's show and drawing a really sort of basic emotional line or obvious connection between the two of them and then extrapolating that out into 3 minutes and 40 seconds or whatever? Like, that is kind of the biggest conversation I always have about people. You're mentioning storytelling. I'd like to know your philosophy.
Well, it definitely is storytelling. And just because we're juxtaposing one thing with another doesn't mean that it isn't art. I mean, just take a look at how much money Andy Warhol made by reproducing Campbell's soup cans in different colors.
Well,
if he had done that today, he probably would have been sued by Campbell's.
Andy Warhol's a little more complicated than that, but sure.
But I'm saying that that's some of the pop art that he did was he basically took existing work. You know, all of his Campbell's soup stuff was just, you know, he did that stuff.
Well, but that was a commentary on art itself, mm-hmm. much in the same way like Dadaism was, you know, back in the 20s. Mm-hmm. I've never seen an anime music video that comments on the lack of creativity in anime music videos. Maybe that's because I don't watch a lot of anime music videos anymore. But there's no subtext. There's nothing beneath the surface. When you're talking about Andy Warhol, there's a lot beneath the surface. Anime music video is fun thing to watch when you're at a convention, and maybe it stirs some emotion in you. And I found that, like, that's the most effective thing AMVs have, is stirring up sort of primal emotions in you, especially if it's on a show that you love and a song that you like. Like, it's really good at getting an emotional reaction, but not a whole lot more than that. But, you know, when you mention storytelling, that to me is a very powerful word. And so do you feel like when you make a music video, you're trying to tell a story with it?
I mean, it really depends on the video. I mean, typically comedy videos, you're not really going to make a story. You're making something that's more of a parody of a story.
Yeah.
Particularly if you're using something that's already funny. But I've seen some videos. In fact, one of my all-time favorite videos would probably be Aqualine Studios did a 9-minute video using Stravinsky's Firebird Suite and told a story with it. Now, granted, it was the story of the existing anime. The name escapes me. I have to look it up and see if I can figure out which one it is, but it was a darn good video. And then but I do agree that there actually is an emotional attachment. But sometimes what you can do is you can take existing source that has one emotional attachment to you, and you can take it in a completely different direction. You know, you can do that with a comedy video. Like, say, if you take a serious anime like Grave of the Fireflies and you make a comedy video out of it, right. Yeah, that's wrong, but you're taking it in a completely different direction than the creators originally intended.
Right, you're repurposing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which in and of itself, that's a legitimate expression. That's a legitimate artistic expression. But rarely is it more, at least I've never seen it. Maybe you can give us some suggestions. I've never seen a video like that that was making a grander statement, even if it is funny, even if it is really subversive, even if it is subverting the material on a really deep level. I've never seen anything that seemed like it was designed to do more than just get some chuckles out of the audience. Like, that's what I don't see. And I'm curious, have you seen that? Have you experienced that?
It's hard to tell because when you have an attachment to the material, you have a certain direction that you think the material is going to go in.
Yeah.
And even if you subvert that, you still have that memory of that particular story in your mind. I mean, granted, people, if you're going to make music videos that are popular, the music videos that are popular, they follow the popular anime. Yeah. And then on the other end of the spectrum, what you can do is you can take a little known anime and you can tell a completely different story using an anime that nobody's seen before, and then suddenly it ends up, when the person ends up seeing the actual anime, they go, oh my god, you just flipped it entirely on its side. It's completely different. I'd have to say that a really good example of this, and actually I can say that I have firsthand experience, was I made a music video, a montage music video, using the music from the Disney's California Adventure ride Soarin' Over California, Jerry Goldsmith music.
Yeah.
And I made the video. My wife saw it. She had never been on the ride.
Mm-hmm.
So her entire experience of being on the ride was colored by the video that I had made.
Yeah.
What's really funny is the video ends with a shot from Macross Plus of somebody reaching up towards the sky. So the first time we go on the ride, my wife actually reached up to the sky at the same moment in song. So I was going, wow, that's kind of a profound effect to have on somebody that you end up, if you end up being first, then their view of that material can be tainted. And that not necessarily, it's not that it's a bad thing. It's just something that you shouldn't really mess around with as an artist, especially if they see their original source material, they go, oh, how could you have done something like that?
Yeah, that's a good point. I like that. I think that's a really, great thing to say. I never really thought about it that way, but when someone's first experience or first exposure to a piece of music or a piece of footage is through an anime music video, that can totally color their view of the original work.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I've also been told many, many times that, like, anime music videos are some of the greatest promotion you can give to an anime. Like, if you want people to see a show, tell them to go watch an anime music video of it, or a really good one, and generally it'll generate some hype and interest, and they'll actually want to go watch that show. That is one of the biggest things I've always been told.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest flattery anybody could give me is if they say, I loved your video, I went out and I got the anime afterwards. And because a lot of times the anime that I'm making a video to is one that means a lot to me. And so if I can create some more fans by putting the video together, then, you know, more power to that.
So, you know, looking over your list of credentials here, your list of the stuff that you've made,
mm-hmm.
It seems like there's a lot of sincerity in here, a lot of real, not a whole lot of just jokes for joke's sake. There's some real sincerity in here. It's born out of a love of whatever it is the show was, or, you know, the song just seemed to fit the emotions you had while you were watching the video. But it would appear to me, and this is just my experience, now anime music videos are not so much about sincere emotion. It's just the comedy angle. That's sort of overtaken whatever the original intention was, but comedy dominates it, like totally dominates it.
Well, if that were the case, then comedy would be the most entered category in contests, and it's actually the opposite. Comedy is the least entered.
Is that because it's harder, you think?
I think it's because people they feel a little bit daunted, because comedy is just so subjective. What may be funny to you may not be funny to somebody else. A really good example is, you know, my video this year is a comedy video, and I've taken it around the convention circuit, but the only, like, really big awards that I've won for it have been in other countries, Canada and Australia. And I'm thinking, maybe I live in the wrong country because my sense of humor is wrong. That's the other thing too, is even if you take a comedy video that's funny in English and you send it to another country, they're not gonna get it. They're gonna scratch their head and wonder, you know, why don't get this joke? So comedy is kind of this, you have to walk on eggshells with comedy. And I actually find that the most of the videos that I see, they end up being action adventure or drama. And most of the drama videos, it's always romance videos, because that's one of the thing, that's one of the genres in anime that people really attach themselves to, is the romantic shows.
Yeah.
You know, the shows about relationships. And that's in as the characters develop a relationship in the anime, the viewer develops a relationship with the anime itself, and they get this bond and they want to tell this story. And that's what motivates them to make a video. So it creates this preponderance of romance videos. So that's actually a tougher category to get through, because there's only a finite number of entries that can get in. And if you have too many entries in one category, it's a lot more difficult to get in. But if you enter comedy, chances, you have a better chance if you're in comedy. I think I don't have the information in front of me, but I think what Anime Expo originally, they used to have an equal number of entries in each category. And this year, because they had a heavy number of entries in action, adventure, and drama, they increased the number of entries in those two categories, and then reduced the number of entries in comedy because there were fewer comedy entries. So that kind of balanced it out, because it didn't mean that you had a better chance of getting in because you made a comedy video. You still had to work hard because there were fewer entries.
Huh. Interesting. I don't know. Maybe it's just that the comedy ones get the most attention and talk, and you know, that's
what they do, because most comedy entries, you know, they tickle your funny bone, and that's a primal response.
Right.
Whereas it's much more difficult to explain to somebody why you really, really liked that sad Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood video.
Right, sure.
Because then you have to start explaining the anime. But most of the time with comedy videos, it's usually at most a character study of a specific character and their behavior, or you try to turn that behavior on their ear. If you're doing a comedy video, you're not really going to spend a lot of time telling the story of the anime.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. So, you know, you're still making videos now, although you mentioned your schedule is greatly reduced.
Yeah.
And it's been, you're over 20 years now making anime music videos.
It's kind of crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, in that time, what has been the best change and the worst change, do you think?
In
the community and anime music videos, like as a medium, as a form of expression, what do you think the biggest change has been, and what do you think the worst change has been?
I actually think that the best and worst change in anime music videos are the same thing, and that is the availability of editing software that's inexpensive. Because for people who are creative and for people who are destined to become really good anime music video creators, it gives them the tools early on that they could practice and continue editing and make their work better. But at the same time, it also provides tools to people who may not be up to that standard. And a lot of times what ends up happening is the tools get mistaken for the talent. How can so-and-so be better at making music videos than I? We both use the same software. It's kind of the reason why I've always liked the AMV, Iron AMV Challenge, also known as the Iron Chef Editing Challenge at Anime Week in Atlanta, because it pits two editors together with the same hardware, the same footage, and it's all about creativity. Who can be the most creative with the same material?
Right. It's a little bit more pure of a competition in terms of, you know, access to tools and access to footage and all that jazz.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see how that would be considered much more of a fair, you know, even challenge, about starting from the same place.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's really interesting. So aside from AMVs, and obviously that's sort of where you built your name. You are, you know, a convention personality, I would say. You've emceed masquerades, I believe you generally judge AMV contests, right?
Actually, I've only judged one AMV contest, and it's mostly because of the fact that I like making AMVs, and I want to be able to submit to the contest.
And you don't want to have to watch 5,000 shitty anime music.
Yes, I can tell. No, I wouldn't go so far as to say that, but I can tell you that the one time AX actually invited the creators to judge the AMVs along with the staff. I guess you could say the whole experience did sour me on it, because that was when it was at the Disneyland Hotel, and they had set aside video room 2, I believe. And they said, okay, everybody, all the creators are invited. You can come in. We're going to start at 8 o'clock. We're going to go until the last video is done. Cause they didn't, this, you know, back in those days, you actually could bring your VHS tape with you the first day of the convention, drop it off, and boom, you were in the contest.
Yeah.
So we sat starting at 8 o'clock, and we watched every video that had been submitted. And it was the first problem was the room wasn't full, but the AC was turned on full blast as if the room was full, and it's late at night, and we were freezing to death, and we just kept watching video after video after video. We didn't finish until 6:30 in the morning. And I can tell you, no, I've never seen people leave a room in more of a hurry than the AMV creators left that room. And needless to say, there's a reason why Anime Expo doesn't do that anymore, because it for judging, especially for a contest like AX that's so huge, it's really more considered to be torture than anything else, because you're watching – it's not just because the videos are bad. It's because mostly – I mean, because you're going to see video after video after video, and it's hard to get your focus on videos that are standouts, especially because the quality of videos has improved dramatically because of the software and because of people's computers and hardware and their tendencies to create technically good videos. It becomes very difficult to isolate the best of the best of the best from the group that you have. You know, you take a break. Like I think if I remember Troy Williams from Anime Expo, he broke down the screenings into individual categories, so as not to get people too tired. But still, you would have an overrepresentation of action-adventure videos and drama videos, which are still going to pummel people emotionally as they're watching so many of them. And then, of course, there's also the situation where an AMV creator who wants to stay ahead of the game will jump on to the latest show that is hot right now so that he can get that visceral response from the audience when it comes on and get that much of a boost in the voting. So, you know, you'll get four or five Gurren Lagann videos, or you'll get four or five Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood videos. Whatever anime is hot that month or during the last 3 or 4 months will get an excessive number of videos made to it. And then after a while, it gets pretty tiring to see the same footage over and over again, just with a different song.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine that would be a serious trial. It's more of an endurance thing than anything else.
And
frankly, like, endurance is not something you should have to deal with or consider like a problem when you're trying to judge an artistic competition. Like,
yeah, exactly.
All right, I looked at 5,000 paintings today. I can't even remember which ones were good.
Sometimes I think that's part of the reason why the Oscar Academy has these strange rules for documentary judging, where it's kind of secretive and how. I don't think they do it this way anymore, but they used to have this rule where if enough people held up their hand to say this, I'm just tired of this movie, they would stop the movie and say, okay, let's move on to the next one. Yeah. So I think maybe people who judge AMV contests wish they had that power. They could say, okay, stop this video. Okay, let's move on. You know, because there's a story that I don't remember what convention it is. This is the story is apocryphal, but I know it's true, of course, because it was told to me by many music video creators that there's a story of an AMV contest where they showed a video, and it was a Sailor Moon video, and people were sick of Sailor Moon videos, so they booed it. And all of a sudden you hear this crying going on in the background. It was a 13-year-old girl, it was her first video, and she loved Sailor Moon and she wanted to make a video. And of course everybody there felt like a complete heel. So there's kind of this unwritten rule among music video creators when we judge other people's work that we don't want to put them down too much unless they're specifically asking us to be brutal, or if there's somebody that we know has a lot of experience, because you never know whose feelings you might hurt.
Yeah, sure. That's well, that makes total sense. So aside from the judging and everything like that, you go to a lot of cons and your face is kind of out there. What is that lifestyle like? And is it like a vacation for you to just look forward to it every year? I mean, it sounds like with the family and everything, like, you don't get out to as many cons as you used to, obviously.
Yeah, when I was single, I would pay for only airfare for myself. Now I have, you know, four people to worry about. Needless to say, it's about as far as I can drive. In fact, I think this year was probably the first year that I skipped Fanime Con in a very, very long time, because we just couldn't afford it. And that's the other thing, too, is, you know, the economy is gone south, and my wife and I aren't making as much money as we used to, so, you know, naturally something has to fall by the wayside. So I guess I focus on Anime Expo. But speaking for the times that, you know, I used to go from convention to convention, I was actually shocked to find, you know, people who knew who I was from my work. But the interesting thing about it is, early on, before you had the prevalence of the internet and spreading of pictures through things like Facebook, people would know my work, but they wouldn't know who I was.
Right.
So I could move you know, in the convention and, you know, selectively tell people, yeah, that's my video. At least that's the way it was in the early days. But then people started taking pictures and started sending them on the internet. A good example is, I think it was maybe my second or third Project Akon that I went to. And I saw a friend of mine, and I saw him standing in line somewhere for a panel. I said, hey, how's it going? I shook his hand and goes, hey, it's good to see you. I said, well, I guess I'll see you around. I'll see you at the contest. He goes, yeah, I'll see you at the contest. And he told me that after I walked away, his friend said, who is that? And he said, well, that's Brad DeMoss. And he said, Brad DeMoss, the AMV creator? I thought he was an a-hole. So, and that was, I guess you could say that's actually something that can happen when, you know, is that some artists can develop a reputation for themselves based on their work and they, without anybody actually knowing them personally. I mean, some of my best friends in the world are fellow AMV creators, but they, you know, they made the effort to come and get to know me as a person. You really can't get to know me as a person from my work, because my work sometimes is totally different than my personality.
Well, so I mean, nowadays, like, aside from just submitting music videos, what do you get out of the convention scene? I mean, obviously, people know who you are now, and you're a bit of a name, and people see you around. Like, what's your favorite part of still attending anime conventions?
It's the same thing I've always enjoyed from attending anime conventions, is hanging out with like minds, people who like anime, people who like AMVs, particularly people who like AMVs, sharing ideas. I was really happy at the AMV 101 panel. You know, people come up to me afterwards and ask me specific technical questions, like how do you do this or how do you do that. And I always share the information with people because I want people to make better music videos. Yeah. I mean, eventually I'm going to have to stop making them, and I want to still enjoy watching AMVs. So I want people to make good AMVs. So if, you know, a technical question is going to prevent somebody from making a good AMV, then I should definitely help them figure it out.
Yeah.
Encouraging new talent is also good too. I was actually I'm actually surprised and flattered at the number of people who have actually come to me and said, yeah, you know, you inspired me to make AMVs. And I said, wow. And it's always a different video.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, no, that must be awesome. So I guess I got to ask, like, so are you still an active anime fan? Do you watch a lot of anime? Do you just cut it down to the hits? Like, what do you watch? What inspires you?
Interestingly enough, I usually end up being the last man to the party. I usually find out from other people or from AMVs that I like. I'm like, hey, this anime looks pretty good. I think I'll watch it, which is kind of strange because, you know, I'm the creator. I'm supposed to be inspiring people to watch new stuff they wouldn't watch otherwise. Mm. I mean, I was so late to the Full Metal Alchemist bandwagon, but it didn't change the fact that the show is pretty awesome and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Then I went and I made a music video. And the thing that was funny about it was that it had been so long since the show first hit that I made a video that it actually had the benefit of being in contests where there maybe was only one or two Full Metal Alchemist videos as opposed to seven or eight.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, but I'm actually kind of selective about it. And especially because, you know, I've got the full-time job and the family to worry about. I don't really have much time to, you know, to choose anime. I might see the first few episodes, and if it's something that I find interesting, then I'll continue watching it. And I unfortunately was one of those people who canceled the DVD portion of their Netflix subscription when they raised their prices.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can't get anime that way, but I can actually, at least I can get the stuff that I can stream.
Right. Which is, I think at this point, how most people are watching anime. I think that's totally normal.
Right. Of course, the disadvantage of watching, I haven't watched on Netflix in a while, but it's really up to the studio whether you can watch it subtitled with the original Japanese, which is still my preferred way of watching it.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's actually a big problem on Netflix. That's why I tend to use Crunchyroll for that sort of thing.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, so before we get to Twitter, we got some questions from fans of yours on Twitter.
I have fans?
You do. Apparently you do. We got some questions for you. I did want to talk about this a little bit, because looking at your bio, you did some voice acting in the early part of the 2000s. Looks like these are all Genion titles.
Yes.
How did that happen? What was that like?
So let me go back to when I met up with Talison Jaffe. He's voice director for...
Now I don't need you to answer the question.
There you go. That's the answer right there. I have to... And, you know, that's pretty much how it happened.
Right. So he saw something in you, and you went to work on such illustrious titles as Amazing Nurse Nanako.
Yes, yeah, so that was kind of weird. Amazing Nurse Nanako.
Yeah,
he wanted the thing is he wanted people, and I'm not sure if this was something that that maybe Genion or Bandai at the time what they wanted him to do, but he wanted to get a slate of people that he used that could do different types of voices.
Right.
And he knew from, you know, because he and I used to be roommates, so of course, you know, he heard all the cartoon voices and things like that and impersonations that I used to do, and he must have heard something in it. Ironically enough, Spirit of Wonder, I got to do that one only because he knew that I could do Carl Sagan, because the very first scene has Carl Sagan. So that's why he actually hired me to do that show. I did a couple of other voices for it, but that was the primary reason I got that show.
Right. And did you try and pursue it afterwards? Was it just like, oh, my friend, he works in this stuff, and when he needs me, I'll do it, and then...
Well, I tried pursuing it, but it's hard to... there's a reason why, people who come to California who want to be actors, there's a reason why they work as waiters and waitresses, and that's because you need to have the part-time job that can give you the flexibility to leave work and go do the auditions. For a while, I did have that job. I actually used to work as a character at Universal Studios, and one of the things about that particular job was that the union requirement was that if you had an audition, they had to let you go do it if you could make up the hours later, and we would do it, and we would go do the auditions. But that's once I had to devote myself to working full time in my current capacity as a technology consultant. I didn't really have much time to do auditions. I didn't have much time to do, you know, any other acting or things like that. So it really is a situation like if somebody wanted to hire me, of course I'd be available to do it, and I could probably get the time off to do it. But, you know, auditioning is kind of more problematic for me.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, very few voice actors that I know or people who are even successful, like who get steady work, have families because it's... Having a family is really expensive, and being just a dedicated voice actor, especially in anime, seems like, you're not going to get rich doing it, you know?
Yeah, but you'll get invited to a lot of conventions.
Yeah, there you go. Free airfare to Des Moines. Yeah.
Well, hey, it's free airfare to Des Moines. I did, you know, back in the day when I was doing a lot of conventions, I would do maybe three or four conventions a year, and I'd see the same faces over and over again, usually voice actors. I'd go, hey, good to see you again.
You're like, well, the airfare was free, so.
Sometimes it was more than that. Some conventions actually treated me very, very well, and I was very grateful for that.
Yeah. You always hear good stories out of that sort of thing. But if I may ask, what character did you play at Universal?
Doc Brown from the Back to the Future movies.
Really? So you would hang out
that was back when it had they had the Back to the Future ride. It has since become the Simpsons ride, so they no longer – even if I had stuck around, they would no longer have anything for me.
Wow, that's – That's cool, yeah. I wish they'd actually upgraded the ride technology for The Simpsons, but...
I haven't even taken the ride yet, so I don't know.
it's still that same big bowl screen where if you're in the top corners, it's all blurry and
stuff.
Yeah,
Omnimax is terrible for us.
Yeah, no shit. All right, man. Well, that's all fascinating stuff. Let me go ahead and get to Twitter here. We got some questions for you. Okay. All right. Big on Anime Asks... What are your favorite anime music videos, and what series do you like seeing anime music videos for the most?
Oh, that's a very good question. I actually get asked my favorite anime music videos a lot. I had previously mentioned the one that was done by Aqualine Studios to Firebird Suite. That's one that's just completely unforgettable for me because of the cojones it took to do an entire video to the 9-minute Firebird Suite, which it's one of those pieces of music that kind of tells a story musically, but you have to try to adapt it to an anime. Still, one of my all-time favorite videos is Lullaby by Jason Abelada, who is not making videos anymore. A lot of AMV creators from when I was making videos, they made the videos because they were going to school, they were going to college, and they had access to the equipment. And then once they graduated, they didn't have access to the equipment anymore, so they just retired from making music videos. And then, of course, they went ahead, got careers and families, and so they didn't have time anymore. But those two are some big standouts for me as far as favorite videos.
Right.
And as far as anime, It kind of depends on whether they're asking if I get a visceral thrill from seeing any old school anime, because that's the kind of stuff that I grew up on. I mean, I'm old enough to, I mean, naturally Speed Racer is a good source material that I always love seeing, especially if it's done well. Star Blazers, AKA Space Battleship Yamato, anything that I grew up on. I grew up on Yamato. I grew up on, Gatchaman when it was Battle of the Planets in the US, and Speed Racer. Those were the shows that I grew up with. It's interesting is that by the time Robotech came out, Macross, I was actually in college and didn't have much time to watch it. What ended up, that was actually a seminal moment in anime, because that was another generation of anime fans that suddenly discovered anime because it had this cohesive storyline that had a beginning, middle, and end, and people were completely blown away by it. For many people, Robotech was their Star Blazers. Star Blazers was like a completely different generation. I also like music videos. If anybody wants to like put together music videos using Urusei Yatsura or Meizu Nikoku, old school 80s anime is always a soft spot for me.
Yeah, we just did a best of the 80s show that was like 4 hours long. And I
watched. Awesome. That's because the 80s had a lot of good stuff.
It did. It introduced me to what is now one of my all-time favorites, the Space Adventure Cobra movie. Okay. Invalid Name asks, was your Star Wars Episode 1 Evangelion video the first movie trailer AMV, or was anyone else doing it first?
I have no idea if anybody was doing it first, but I do know that today you've got a ton of mashups, including not just AMV mashups either. If you go to the internet and you type in trailer mashup, you'll get a whole bunch of different trailer mashups.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard for me to know whether that was – whether that was the first AMV mashup. I do know that the same year that Episode 1 came out, which was 2000, I went to Comic-Con the same year, and there was a lot of buzz around, I forget his name, but he was the one who had actually created the fake trailer for Episode 2 using existing footage of the actors that he knew were going to be in the movie. And that was really impressive because – and of course, apparently he was a working editor who didn't want his name revealed because he thought Lucas was going to sue him. But it turns out that Lucas likes that kind of stuff.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Interesting. It's interesting that one time Episode 1 is probably the only AMV of a sort that I actually have the blessing of both the company that distributed the anime and the company that distributed the audio. Because Dave Williams from AD Vision, that was back when AD Vision distributed Evangelion, he actually was. We were doing the Iron Chef Challenge the second time at AWA, and he actually stood up and said, a lot of you wonder how we feel about AMVs. We love them. They promote our stuff, and we watch them every day. And he actually said, Brad, we watch Episode 1 every day at AD Vision. I said, well, thank you. I said, now jot that down. And then the following year, I was at FanimeCon, and somebody from Lucasfilm said, yeah, everybody at Lucasfilm loves Episode 1. So that's also pretty flattering, but at least it's something that I can have in there saying, yeah, okay, both video and audio source material people, they like the video.
Awesome. All right.
I recommend it. I don't know if any of your listeners have ever – you probably have seen this, but I guess you could say the quintessential trailer parody is Titanic 2, The Surface. It was a trailer that was so good the guy was featured on the Today Show. So that's – I don't think I could ever be that good.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. AngelX03 asks, where do you draw the line on what's considered an anime music video, especially on ones that use original animated content or non-anime sources?
You're talking about original. If you create original animation for an AMV, because there's a big debate going on now about whether music videos done to Avatar: The Last Airbender or, to some extent, The Boondocks, which are North American animation that's inspired by anime, so it has anime style characters, but it's technically not anime because it's not Japanese, and that's probably the current frontier. Or another one, of course, is My Little Pony: Friendship is Magic, which. There's a lot of music videos being done to that show, and people say, is it classified as an AMV because it's anime inspired? I just think AMVs as definition, it's really up to the person who makes them. I mean, I personally didn't think that Steam was an AMV because it was only 15% anime, but it wins Best in Show at Akon's Anime Music Video Competition. It's totally up to interpretation. But I just put stuff together because my beginnings were just in animation in general.
Yeah.
AMVs are just a good outlet because you know that's actually where some of the – I'd have to say that the largest stretch of good animated material is anime. I have – out of all the anime that I've seen, I've yet to see stuff that's really, really bad.
Really?
At worst, it's mediocre, which is saying a heck of a lot more than what comes out of you know other countries.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I see a lot of bad anime. It's my line of work, though. So.
Well, yeah, it's your line of work. You see a lot of bad anime. I get to pick and choose what I see.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it looks like...
And it's always based on word of mouth, so I know I can't go wrong.
Yeah, well, it's looking at your credentials here, like, generally, it seemed to like the good stuff. All right. This is actually... I kind of want to close out with this, because I just think it's a good question to end on. AngelX03 asks, after the dawn of dance effects-filled anime music videos... MEPs, AMV hell type videos. What do you think the next innovation is going to be?
Wow, that's I think the next innovation is going to be there's going to be more anime music videos that feature original animation because just like the editing tools, for a lot of people, the music video creation or creating anime music videos is a way of creating videos from existing footage because you don't have the talent or the tools to animate yourself. But now you have software tools that will let you do your own anime or do your own moving comic book. And it's really cheap and it's really accessible. And the laptops are getting much more powerful, so you can do it wherever you want. You could even do it on you can do it on your smartphone. You can do it on your tablet. You know, you've got iMovies available for, you know, for iPhone and for iPad. So you could actually shoot video, edit it inside the tablet, and next thing you know, you're posting it on the internet without even actually using a computer. So as things get, as the smaller devices get more powerful and the software gets cheaper, I think that's probably the next frontier is people who want to tell a story that can't be told with existing footage will create their own footage.
Right. So actually, before we go,
yeah,
I'm curious because my thought is on this whole thing. I get asked, we get this question sometimes. It's like, hey, what's the next thing in anime music videos? We've seen people do all kinds of crazy After Effects stuff, and like, you've seen basically every video effect you could possibly do.
Yeah, even the Star Wipe.
Yeah, right, exactly. But my thing is like, are you familiar with an artist named Pogo, who makes these? He makes these massive videos where he's creating a song from clips from Disney movies, the Harry Potter films. He'll make a song. It's like sort of a trance song that's cut to clips. So he's creating music and a video. So the video will be choreographed scenes from this thing, and he's also taken songs and audio from the film to create music.
So kind of taking a kind of like an audio mashup of dialogue from one scene with dialogue from one film with dialogue from another film, and then is putting a backbeat, maybe a little auto-tune?
Actually, I don't think there's any auto-tune in it, but there's a little bit of a backbeat that he produces.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's all from one film. So he'll have like one, he has like a Mary Poppins video and an Alice in Wonderland video and like a video from like Hook. Mm-hmm. You know, and he did like a Lord of the Rings one too, where it's little clips of audio that come together to make a song. And the music's really good. You can listen to it on its own. Like, I have a bunch of it on my iPod. And then the videos bring an extra thing to it. I would love to see someone try that. It is 1,000 times, I think, more difficult. Not as an insult to the way anime music videos are produced now, but that's a lot harder.
And it's a lot harder also because the source material is Japanese, and so if you use the original Japanese voice acting, it's not going to make much sense. And if you use the the American voice actors, then you also end up you could end up alienating the people who like the subtitling instead of the dub version. I did one time a long time ago. I did hear a song that somebody came up with, and I've been trying to find it for the longest time, but. It was a song called Ava Porn, and it's very similar to what you were talking about, where this person took individual clips from the English language version of Evangelion and juxtaposed lines of dialogue with a backbeat and made it this hilarious video that was all about suggestive dialogue and suggestive things like a constant loop of Asuka going, oh, I got to get out of here naked, and it goes over and over and over because that ends up being the chorus.
Right. Yeah. Stuff like that. You don't see a lot of people attempting that, I guess. Yeah. It is very difficult.
And it's very impressive because they have a lot more patience than I could.
All right, yeah. It'll be interesting to see where it goes from here. But anyway, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. It's been fascinating to talk to you. And, you know, best of luck at your next anime music video comp.
Well, thank you very much, Zach. It's been a pleasure being on with you. And keep in touch.
Yeah, thanks a lot.